This is FNX.
Listen to Shoot the Difference. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer.
It's the Hello, most welcome, happy Christmas, because it's Christmas Eve and you know you're going to be listening to this before Christmas Day, so happy Christmas in advance. Welcome to Shoot the Defense on FNX. I'm your host, Stel, and I have four cracking co-hosts with me tonight. First of all, the returning Rodri Giggs. How are you doing, Rod?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Thanks. Good,
yeah?
Good. Yesterday, so...
There you go.
Yeah, it's good.
I can tell by the tone of your voice that you're a happy chappy. Co-host number two is Mr. Yannickis J. Hello, my friend.
Hello, my friend.
Oh, look at him. Christmas come early for Mr. Yan.
Oh, mate, that's the best Christmas present ever.
Oh, ever, ever? Ever, ever?
Well, for now, anyway.
There you go.
For this year.
Splendid. What do you mean? Is there more than one Christmas day this year, Yan?
Well, I wasn't prepared for that question.
For crying out loud. Next guest is Connor. How are you doing, Connor? You right, mate?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Thank you very much for having us on.
Another man who supports the team with a new manager bounce.
Oh, we are loving life at the moment. Thank you.
Everyone's so positive and energetic this evening. I love it. It's brilliant. I say this evening, it's morning. It's 12 past midnight. Crikey. For someone that's with us now, it's not midnight. It's Mark Briggs. Mark, how are you doing, geezer?
Not too bad, mate, yourself.
Yeah, all good, man. Your team didn't win this weekend, but again, you're in America and you're happy, so there you go.
Yeah, there you go, mate.
You ready for Christmas?
Yeah, ready as I'll ever be.
What are you doing for the little one?
Not much. We're just out in California visiting Mrs. Parents, so we're just up in Northern California at the minute.
Ah, excellent. I'm getting ready for all these Instagram posts where people have left out carrots and cookies for Father Christmas and Rudolph and all that. Is anyone else thinking?
Say that again, mate.
I said I'm just waiting for all the Instagram videos for people putting up, you know, cookies and rain and carrots for Rudolph and all that.
Of course, mate, of course.
Yeah. Anyone doing anything for their kid Christmas time? Rod, you doing anything special for your little one? Or little ones?
Yeah, the same. Same stuff, you know, cookies, milk. Just normal stuff, really. Nothing too strong.
The reason why I bring this up is because the other day I bumped into an old friend of mine. I hadn't seen him for years, and you know, it's been so long since I've seen him. I haven't even seen his kid before, and his little one's 5 years old. And I go, "Oh yeah, you're gonna be putting out, you know, carrot for Rudolph." She goes, "Yeah." I go, "Oh, you know, carrots are good for your eyesight." And she looked at me, she goes, "That's a myth." I looked at her, I said, you know what I wanted to say to her? Before your mummy met your daddy, your mummy wasn't a good girl. She ain't a good girl, right? That's a myth, her being a good girl. But I couldn't say that.
Is your friend listening to this show?
No.
Oh, thank God.
He's not a football fan. He's not a football fan. But, yeah. That's probably why he's not my friend. He's not a football fan. I ain't seen him for 6 years.
It'll be another six after what you just said. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get added on Twitter now, aren't I? Oh, well, okay. Anyway, let's talk about football. Let's talk about football, and our Prem review begins with two big results relating to the Manchester clubs. Less than 48 hours after United lost to Liverpool last weekend, the powers that be pulled the trigger on Jose Mourinho's time as head coach, bringing in club legend Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as interim manager until the end of the season. Now, as fate would have it, Solskjaer's first match in charge was against Cardiff City, the club he failed to keep in the Premier League. The new manager bounce was in full flow as United blitzed Cardiff 5-1 thanks to goals from Rashford, Herrera, Martial and a brace from Lingard. Meanwhile, at the empty head, Pep Guardiola's Man City suffered a shock 3-2 defeat at the hands of Crystal Palace. Now, Rod, you and I haven't spoken about Mourinho's departure, and to be honest, I didn't really expect it to happen so soon with the, you know, United in such a terrible league position, the team playing terrible football and the club's share price plummeting. It wasn't really much of a surprise that Jose was sacked. How would you sum up his time at the club?
A few turbulent, toxic, defensive, you know, but even all those things, he still, you know, he still brought silverware and he still worked wonders last year. If you just think about it now, how we finished second with that group of players playing the way he played was a pretty bit of a masterstroke, really. But yeah, even though it doesn't sit right with me, it was probably the right decision because it was getting a bit toxic. And you know, players were, it was just becoming a bit of a soap opera, really. Not what you want to see. And, you know, obviously the change, it couldn't come quick enough. And it obviously shown yesterday with the performance they put out there.
Mm. Well, Jan, I know you've been banging the Jose Mourinho out drum for a long time. And to be fair, mate, you're the first person I thought of when I heard the announcement. And it wasn't because of things that you've been saying about Jose Mourinho. It was just that I was more surprised the timing of it, really. We knew that the Liverpool result wasn't good. The performance wasn't good enough. It was, you know, utter shambles. But at the same time, you know, for them to sack him, paying him out the money that they did, I was actually surprised they didn't wait until the end of the season. What did you make of it at first?
I wasn't surprised, though, because if Mourinho would have stayed in the January transfer window, he would have demanded money to improve the squad. Now, the fans would have wanted signings. The board wouldn't have wanted to give Mourinho the money. And then the place would have been even more like chaotic. So the fact that they sacked him, they'll get Solskjaer in. They won't really strengthen in January and save all the money for the new manager in the summer, which made sense. And I know this is hindsight now, but I turned around to my dad at the Liverpool game. I don't know if you remember when he showed Woodward. I think he whispered something to Bobby Charlton during the game and the cameras picked it up. I think that's when I knew he'd be gone. You can sense that, you know, his time was up. And to be fair, something that you said, Steph, for a long time, Mourinho actually wanted to get sacked himself.
Yeah.
You know, he stopped caring. You know, he threw players under the bus. The football was terrible. Even some of his decisions that he was making, you know, the team selections and players playing out of position, you know, it was bad. And for, you know, for the club of our size, it was a shambles. So I wasn't surprised at all still. And one thing I want to say is, you know, me wanting the manager out at Man United, you know, I don't get satisfaction out of that because that means there's a problem at my football club.
Yeah.
So, you know, he had to go because something had to change. You're not going to sack 20 Man United players. The board definitely ain't going to go now. So ultimately, the manager's going to pay for it. And, you know, as harsh as this might sound, he did deserve to go after all.
Yeah. The thing is, I'd be a hypocrite if I slated everyone who celebrated when Jose was sacked, because I was absolutely chuffed when Moyes got the sack, you know, and that was dreadful. The thing is, when I heard the news, I was a little bit disappointed because I thought, well, I was kind of hoping that he'd turn things around. It didn't turn out to be what we wanted it or we expected it to happen. The thing is with Mourinho, what I will say is he's kind of become the master of getting sacked. And yep. By that, I mean, if he got sacked through gross misconduct, then he wouldn't have got paid out. But the thing is, he got sacked in a way that he was very tactical in the way that he lost his job. He was saying the right things to get the fans on side, but at the same time, he was saying things that wasn't going to get him the sack. It was the performances and things that are going in and around the club that eventually got him the sack. But Mark, given the way he lost his job at United and obviously Chelsea, he was practically the same way. Can you see him getting a big job again? Will teams take a punt on him?
Yeah, I think somebody will take a punt on him. I think what Rodri just said, he's like, even though people are saying he's not had the greatest time at United, which he hasn't, he's still put silverware on the table, do you know what I mean? He's still won things. And at the end of the day, people want managers who win trophies. So somebody will give him a shot.
Whoever employs him will give him a 2-year contract.
I think it will be the next Paris Saint-Germain manager, to be honest.
I think it'd be Real Madrid, to be honest.
Real Madrid, I'm with Roger on this. I think
I agree with Rod. I think he'll go back there or maybe into Milan.
Really? Well, you think that Real Madrid will take a punt on him again?
Yep.
Any reason?
Perez loves him. Florentino Perez.
Yep.
Likes him, doesn't he?
Okay. Well, what do you think, Connor?
I'm on Mark, so I reckon Inter Milan will take a punt on him again because they're not... Well, Luciano Spalletti is kind of losing his mind a bit over there at the moment. I mean, he's got all kinds of problems going on.
Mm-hmm.
Knocked out of Champions League when they really didn't expect to be. The Nainggolan problems are just going on and on and on.
I just think it wouldn't be a smart move for him, though. Looking over to Juventus at the minute, what's going on over there? Is he fighting another losing battle at the minute if he goes to there, where Real Madrid, he's still got the players and the funds to...
I suppose Real Madrid will get given, they need to rebuild, don't they? And he'll get given that money to...
Yeah, exactly. Where Inter Milan, will he get given the money that he needs?
If anything, actually, I think Inter Milan need to sell first because FFP's catching up with AC, isn't it? So
yeah. Can you imagine Jose Mourinho getting the Real Madrid job in the summer and Eden Hazard joining him as well?
I know
Sergio Ramos came out and he said, you know, people need to show more respect to the coach we have now, and you know, because Mourinho left us 5 years ago, yet everyone keeps talking about him. So I still think there's a bit of animosity between the two there.
Well, wherever he goes, it causes problems, doesn't it? It's not a coincidence. He's gone to Chelsea, Real Madrid and United and fallen out with all the big players. It's a pattern everywhere he's gone.
Yeah, throwing his toys out of the pram. Listen, as I said before, I'm gutted it didn't work out. I was wrong about it because, you know, I said he's the guy that should have really taken over from Ferguson. But knowing what we know now and the players that we had back then, you know, Rod, you know, Rio has been very vocal about his... lack of belief in Mourinho. Can you imagine if Jose took over then, you know, with the likes of Vidic and Evra and all those there, they would have destroyed him, wouldn't they?
I don't think, to be honest, that you're talking of the calibre players that you just mentioned there. I don't think he'd have them problems with them type of players because they were just world-class defenders.
Okay, fair enough. Well, let's talk about the game. And Connor, United were ruthless in front of goal and played the football that mirrors the, inverted commas, United way rhetoric. I mean, I know it was only Cardiff, mate, and many people have said that on social media, but it's a step in the right direction, isn't it?
I don't think there was any other direction you could have stepped, if I'm honest. It's kind of, it's not the lowest point of United's history, but when you look at what else is going on in the league, it's not good. It hasn't been good, is it? But yeah, I mean, goals, and it was all the entire front four scored, didn't they? Lingard got two, you know, it was entertaining. You saw intent. You can't read too much into it because, like you did say, it is Cardiff. And I think even if Mourinho was still in charge, that game would have been won. Because for all the praise people give Cardiff's home form, it wasn't good from them. But you can only beat what's in front of you, and it's only going to get better, isn't it? Let's be honest.
Well, United fans hope anyway. Well, yeah, listen, Christmas literally came early for you and most United fans. I mean, that performance at the weekend is something we're not used to seeing. Feels good, doesn't it?
Yeah, that was like watching United, to be honest. It was good, Snow. It was good. It's something that we've all missed as United fans, and it's something that I've been crying about for the last, 2 years, I guess. You could tell by the players, you know, they were hungry. For me, the most important thing was the attitude. It was the desire. You know, I didn't see too many sideways passes. It was all forward. I saw potentially 6 to 7 players around the box. you know, and the stats kind of prove it. It was like 11, 12 shots on goal, 74% of the ball, but it was 74% possession being effective, being ruthless, being deadly, not 74% passing backwards and De Gea having the most touches, you know, in the game. But, you know, United have lost to clubs like Brighton and Huddersfield, so, you know, to say it was only Cardiff, you know, it's all about the application of the players and the attitude, and the attitude was spot on. Yeah, maybe it's the fact that Solskjaer just come in and it's the new manager's, you know, syndrome, whatever, but, you know, hopefully it's signs to come. United have got a good run of fixtures at the moment, and if they, you know, get a bit of momentum, you know, you never know what can happen. They can possibly might squeeze into that fourth position that, you know, that's what we're aiming for now.
Mark, as a head coach yourself, mate, how important is having a backroom staff that knows all about the club? You know, you've got Mike Phelan there, obviously Michael Carrick, a former player, and obviously Solskjaer. I don't think he was the first name on everyone's lips when Jose Mourinho got sacked as a potential caretaker, but obviously, you know, the stature of Solskjaer has, and, you know, being a club legend, is going to play a huge part, isn't it?
Massive. I think it was a smart move from the directors at United, to be honest, because, you know, the club had started to, fans again, a bit disgruntled, not only at Mourinho, but, you know, at Woodward and the way the club was being run. So I think it's a smart move having Mike Phelan, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Carrick on the backroom staff, people who are legends at the club, were top players themselves. Do you know what I mean? To try and get the club back in the direction it should be.
Mm. There's just one more thing I'd like to add, and I'm going to stick my oar in about the Glazers again. I know people are going to be sighing and saying, oh, here we go again. But what people need to realise is that, forget the whole managerial thing for the moment. When Jose Mourinho was sacked and Solskjaer came in, the club's value went up by £150 million, according to the New York Stock Exchange, right? So the Glazers are actively looking to sell the club. We know this already. We've known this for a while now. Now, if they stuck with Jose Mourinho, clearly the value of the club would have gone even lower. The club, the team wouldn't have progressed as quickly as they have already. So it would have been even more difficult for the owners to sell at the price that they want. Also, we've got to take Brexit into consideration. And by that, I mean the value of the pound will significantly drop, which means the value of the club would drop as well. So they had to act. There was no other option. They had to get rid of the manager. And with the club still in the Champions League, it's still a viable asset. So, again, they've done the right thing by the club, but they've also done the right thing from a business perspective for them anyway. So let's not make any bones about it. They haven't done it for the fans. They haven't done it for all the millions of people in social media. They haven't done it for Goldbridge or Housen or all these other guys on social media. They've done it for themselves. So let's just nip that in the bud right now. Anyway. No, that's my take on it. Connor, Andros Townsend, he's got 17 Premier League goals. 10 of them have been scored from outside the box. I mean, his strike against City was incredible, mate, as was his performance. Do you think he gets enough credit for what he does at Palace, especially when Zaha's out?
I'll start this off with a positive, because we know it's going downhill from there.
You don't have an agenda against Crystal Palace. Let's just get that right. You don't.
No, I don't. You just happen to give me questions about players I don't like. great goal. Arguably, it's going to be goal of the season unless something absolutely magical happens in the second half. But yeah, he contributes to them. He doesn't score as much as everyone thinks. For me, he's overrated. He's overrated a bit harsh. But, you know, he hit the post once for England, and everyone thinks he's this long shot merchant, but he's all right. I think it says more about the Palace squad than it does Andros Townsend. But, you know, they need more than Townsend, don't they, if they haven't got Zaha? I don't want to go too hard on him, because we spoke about it earlier in the recording, and it annoyed me then. But yeah, he's good for the Palace squad, but in my opinion, the Palace squad is not anywhere near good enough as to what it should be. But great goal, great win, fair play to him.
Connor with one N has spoken, ladies and gents. Yeah, and Roy Hodgson became the first English manager to win a Premier League game at the Etihad since Harry Redknapp in May 2010. Now, he got a lot of stick during his tenure as England manager. This result and performance must be up there as one of his best in his managerial career, surely.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I mean, you know, Roy has worked wonders there, hasn't he, to be fair?
That's a tongue twister.
he's done a brilliant job, mate, from where Palace was when he took over to keeping them up. And, you know, without their, you know, Benteke, who's their, you know, I know he doesn't score goals, but he's their main striker. And when Zaha doesn't play, you know, they struggle for Palace to be where they are and always afloat. You know, he's done a great job, and no one expecting them to go to the Etihad and win, which they did. They did it in style as well. They played good football. You know, you've got to give them credit. I mean, you know, the one time I really want City to win, because Liverpool top of the league, they're going to lose to Palace. And, you know, it just sums up the whole bloody season so far. But, but no, you got to give Palace credit and Hodgson for the way he set out his team. And to be fair, they were brave as well. They didn't actually sit back and you know, and wanted to soak up the pressure. They had the goal, which is refreshing to see. And, you know, no, fair play to them.
Okay. Mark, I've got a bone to pick with Kyle Walker. He had the stinker of a game, giving Schlupp plenty of time and room to level things up. Then he conceded a penalty after chopping Meyer in the box. I mean, I've always questioned his defensive ability, mate. Do you think he'll recover from this?
Yeah, mate. I think for sure. I think at the end of the day, he's a top player. He's an international player. You have bad games, you forget about him and you get on. He had one the other day, but I'm sure he'll be still starting in the team for Guardiola, and I'm sure he'll be performing, you know, at the level that he usually performs at.
Stel, can I just touch up on Kyle Walker?
Well, if I say no, are you going to ignore me?
Yes. Yeah. I don't personally think he's a great defender, in my opinion. I think his pace gets him out from a lot of mess that he puts himself. I think positionally he's not good. Even in one-on-one situations, I don't think he's very good. I just think because he's very pacey, he gets away with a lot of things. And, you know, that's my opinion.
Well, I've been saying that about him.
I agree with you, mate. I agree with you.
Yeah. Thank you. See?
Well, Mark's culture. I've been saying that about him and Hector Bellerin for ages, but, you know, yep. What I know. Oh, well, anyway.
Yeah.
Another shot came at Stamford Bridge, where Jamie Vardy bagged the winner in Leicester's 1-0 win over Chelsea. The win keeps Claude Puel's men behind Bournemouth and Watford, who won 2-0 against Brighton and West Ham, respectively. You know what? I can't wait to listen to the next Sofa Sports news, because Harry loves Claude Puel and Dan DeLuca doesn't. So that'll be an interesting show to listen to. So check them out when they eventually record it. Mark, Leicester now have 3 wins in their last 10, although they were very fortuitous as Chelsea missed many opportunities. Claude Puel praised his side for their hard work and counter-attacking football. While Leicester won, I can't help but think his team can only play one way. Do you agree?
It certainly seems that way. But on Saturday, it was effective, you know what I mean? It was, they went in there and they rode their luck at times, but they defended well and they looked very good on the break with Maddison and Vardy. So to go into Chelsea and get a 1-0 result, it's a great result for them.
Could you play that system in USL? Because I know it's a very frenetic league, you know, a lot of back and forth, a lot of attacking football. Are there many teams that can really play that kind of system and rely on a counter-attack?
Yeah, there's a few teams that do, to be honest. A lot of teams just tend to... You go to certain places and you end up coming away. You've had like 70% of the ball, 80% of the ball, and you end up coming away losing 1-0. So a lot of people do set up that way, very defensive, and then they've got a couple of quick players to break forward and attack. Sometimes you get outdone.
So how do you beat these teams? Because is it all about movement? Is it about moving the ball quicker? Is it about a bit of luck?
I think all of the above, what you've just said, mate. You obviously need a bit of luck, but I think tactically your players have got to be tuned into the way you're going to play, and you have to show them video before game, showing them how you can exploit their weaknesses, and making sure you're aware of they're also the dangerous players and how they can hurt you. But I think you have to stick to your philosophy, you have to stick to your beliefs, and make sure the players understand from every standpoint tactically how you're going to be successful against that type of team.
UEFA coaching badge, my arse. I'll give you a Blue Peter badge and a tactical lesson. Don't worry about it.
There you go, mate.
Thank you very much. Rod, Sarri told the BBC at full time, after the goal, the reaction was not the right reaction. That's not his accent, by the way. I can't do his reaction, his accent. He said, we reacted a little shocked with a mental confusion. This isn't the first time Sarri has questioned his team's mentality. When I see how Napoli capitulated last season, despite having one hand on the Scudetto, I can't help but question Sarri's motivational methods. What do you think?
Yeah, it's difficult because you're going along the lines where you can't criticise or say anything negative about your players. It can't always be positive. You can, you know, if he's not happy, then he can't express his feelings. He's just got to be that balance. You know, obviously Mourinho took it to another level where, you know, they just players where you just lost them. Where if you're critical in the right areas and not too harsh, then, you know, these grown men and professionals should be able to take it on board and improve on it.
Connor, what do you make of Sarri? Because you know I'm not his biggest fan.
It's hard, isn't it? Because he came in and he got the record for the longest first stint without losing a game.
He's also got the longest managerial reign for not ever winning anything. 30 years.
Pochettino's gunning for that one, don't worry.
Behave.
I don't know, it's almost like he's a one-trick pony like Claude Puel, but with Claude Puel's isn't based around one player. Sarri's almost is, isn't it? It's almost if you stop Jorginho, you've stopped the system. So he kind of needs to evolve a bit, doesn't he, or have a plan B, because everyone always says the Premier League's very different to the other leagues, and it is, isn't it? We've got such a variety of teams in here who all play completely different. I think he just needs to be a bit more adaptable, and he also needs someone to put the ball in the back of the net, really.
Yeah, true. I'll just go back to what I was telling you on your show earlier on this evening about Sarri's Wikipedia entry on his personal life. The first thing they've put is that he's a smoker. Well, that's a great advert for a Benson Hedges if I've ever seen one. I don't know. Well, look, back to you, Con. I mean, something doesn't seem right about Chelsea to me. I doubt they'll finish as the top four unless they sign a striker in January. Are you confident they'll end up in the top four without a striker?
Pre-season, I was. Pre-season, I was thinking they could be the secret title challenger, but it just hasn't worked, has it? Because Morata is just falling off a cliff. And then, you know, the strikers, I think, with Callum Wilson, 35 million. He's good. He'll get you a few, but he's not a Chelsea striker, is he? If you know what I mean, he's not. They should be aiming for a different level of player, and I think unless they go out and spend big money, which will mean offloading Morata or Hazard, But then losing Hazard is going to weaken them anyway. So I fear for them. I think Arsenal will see a crack in the door for them to sneak in the top four this season, I think. And likewise, Man United, if they can continue winning games.
I think with Chelsea, they're just too inconsistent. We've spoken about the defensive frailties with Rudiger and Luiz, but they're just so inconsistent. They might win two or three on the bounce, and then they'll lose one, then draw one, then win a few. So I just can't see them maintaining a top four charge, really. That's just my opinion. What do you guys think, Mark?
Yeah, no, I think they could flutter away this season, to be honest. Finish, they'll be lucky to hold on to that fourth spot, but finish, you know, between fourth and seventh in those type of positions. But I also think Sarri will be, the team will be stronger next season with his second season in charge when he's been around the Premier League a little bit. Yeah, I think they'll be a much better team next year with a bit more consistency.
Yeah, and have they been underwhelming, mate?
Yeah, I think so, mate. But again, it probably comes down to the manager that he's never won anything before, so he kind of hasn't been there, done it, if you know what I mean. He's his teams have always been the same, you know, wherever he's been, you know, they play good football, he gets decent results here and then, but he doesn't achieve nothing at the end of the season. So I think it's probably going to be the same at Chelsea as well. They definitely need a centre-forward. I still think they need probably another centre-half. You're not going to win the league with Rudiger and Luiz at the back as well. But then again, he's only been there, 6 months? So, you know, you've got to give him a little bit of time as well. Maybe next year with a bit more money to spend, then you don't know. But this season for him, if he gets chosen to the Champions League, then I guess it's probably a decent season.
Fair enough. Well, gents, what do you guys make of Ndidi? Because he was very, very impressive in the middle of the park.
I'm a big Ndidi fan. I really am. I think he's one of those players who he's shown he's got quality in that Leicester side. I think if he was to make the step up, he's one of those that could prove to be quite a shrewd signing for someone. He's not quite the sitting midfielder that your Kante is, but he's got a bit of everything about him, and he really is kind of a jack of all trades, master of none, which can be very useful in a team that needs to free up some more of its more expressive players. So you're looking at a fragment like a Tottenham who need to replace Moussa Dembele soon. He could make the step up there and be quite an asset for him.
I wonder if any of the papers have gone with the headline "Yes, Ndidi." Oh. See,
it's a poor man's Patrick Vieira.
Oh, look at this from the Wolves good, fan.
Good player, mate. Good player. I like him, but that type of mould. Yeah, I agree with what Connor just said. He's a very good player. Could be effective for somebody, but not quite that world class player.
He's got a good shot on him as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
He's got a good strike.
He's no Keith Andrews, is he, Mark?
No, he's not, mate.
Fair enough. Yeah, and Arsenal made light work of Burnley with Aubameyang banging him a brace. I couldn't even say that properly. Ozil got a lot of praise for his performance, but I'm surprised with the lack of credit Aubameyang gets. He scored 22 goals in 31 Premier League games. What do you make of him?
I'm not his biggest fan.
You don't like his hair, that's why.
Yeah, but I'm not his worst fan either. I mean, you can't criticise a striker who scores goals, first of all. I mean, I wish we had one of them at United, to be fair. So, you know, for the fact that he came in, was it January he came in last year?
That's
it was
right.
January, wasn't it? Yeah, so to hit the ground running, as he has done, in a team that, you know, let's face it, we're kind of struggling under Wenger last year and a new manager syndrome this year. You know, he's done well. My biggest problem with him is I don't think he gets involved in the play too much. He relies on service too much from the others for him to score goals. But when he's given the opportunity, he puts them away. So, you know, like I said, you can't argue with a guy that puts the ball in the back of the net.
Mm. Mark, Sean Dyche said, it wasn't a 3-1 game. I'm not sure what he was watching. Arsenal were obviously breezed past Burnley, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, mate. He moaned about the referee decisions and whatever else, didn't he, and not getting the penalty when they got pulled down in the box. But yeah, Arsenal were much stronger, much stronger, and you can see his tactics are starting to come in now. They look a good side. They look sharp. He's getting the best out of the top players there. And like you say about Aubameyang, to score that many goals in that amount of games, you can't knock him, really.
Mm. Do you know what cracks me up about Sean Dyche? He isn't flavour of the month anymore, and he knows it. And people are actually twigging that he's a fraud and he's a failure. And you know, he can only play one system. So whenever he gets this criticism from the press, or whenever he gets asked questions that he doesn't like, he answers with like a really spiky response. And I think he'll be the next manager to go, to be fair.
Yeah, but do you know what, Stardar? To be fair to him, I do agree with what you're saying, but the decisions the other day that went against Burnley, like, he's got every right, though, to come out another month, can't he?
Well, listen, this is football. It isn't the UFC, man. For crying out loud. I don't know what the past three or four games, all he's been doing is getting his players to kick others. That's all he does.
Yeah, but I'm talking about Saturday.
He plays the same 4-5-1 system. He plays the same 4-5-1 system. He's got the similar strikers in Vokes and Wood. They're the same player, really. It's just, you know, their DNA is the same.
This is Burnley still. What's he supposed to do with the budget and the players that he's got?
Oh, don't give me that. They spent £13 million on a Derby midfielder. I'm not having it.
Okay. £13 million? You know, you can't even get a bag of crisps in the football days for £30 million these days. I mean, that's the level Burnley
you can get. You can get Guendouzi for £7 million. Don't at me.
I'm not saying you can't find gems. I'm just saying at Burnley, you know, with the limited resources he's got, he's going away to the Emirates. Some of the decisions in that game, I mean, is it, you know, you can't mount the fact that his striker gets pushed in the box and he doesn't get a penalty. I mean, if that was United, if that was Arsenal, if that was anybody else, would mind that was a pen, so why can't he?
I think you're too pro Sean Dyche. You know,
you're
sticking up for Sean Dyche, right? But Mourinho did exactly the same thing, and you're having a go at him.
Huh?
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about the decisions on Saturday. I'm not sticking up for Sean Dyche. I'm talking about the decisions on Saturday that went against his team. He's got every right to moan. Xhaka falls down in the ground in the penalty box by himself. No one touches him. The striker's through on goal to score a goal, and the referee blows a whistle and gives a free kick. For what?
Well, I just think you should stop moaning, get his team to start playing football. You can't rely on Robbie Brady to take your set pieces and hope that someone gets on the end of it. It's pathetic.
No, you can't. And he's the job he's doing at the moment, yeah, he's struggling, you know. But I'm talking based on the fact of the decisions on Saturday. That's all.
Jan, who knocked Burnley out of the Europa League?
Olympiacos.
Right, there you go. That says it all. Says it all. Next.
Olympiacos are a bigger club than Burnley.
Next. I'm not having this. They got beaten by the fourth place team in Greece.
Olympiacos are rich. Burnley are not.
They're rich. Yeah, okay. They're very rich, aren't they? Right, okay. Whatever. Anyway, Connor, another game, another win for your boys. They made light work of Huddersfield despite a couple of scares. You're loving life at the moment, aren't you?
Well, I am actually in love. I'm in love with Ralph Hasenhüttl, but any man that came in could have done a better job than old Sparky, couldn't it? But no, we look good. We look high energy, attacking with actual intent, a bit of a purpose. He's getting a tune out of Redmond, which we all knew he could turn into a decent player. It was just clearly no manager was capable of doing that.
Don't criticise Mark Hughes, you'll upset Rod.
He's the richest man this year, isn't he, being a shit manager? but yeah, you know, we're two wins on the trot. I haven't done that in a while. I haven't scored three in twice in a row for over 2.5 years. Fingers crossed we can take that into West Ham. Dan Ings is banging in goals. Charlie Austin's on the bench. Happy days. Everyone's happy.
Fair enough. Gents, Spurs weren't affected at all by the talk about Pochettino possibly becoming United's next manager as they beat up Everton worse than Ike beat Tina. It was a resounding performance from Spurs. They looked comfortable even when they were a goal down. There's a talking point where Calvert-Lewin scored a goal which was judged to have fouled. I forgot who he supposedly fouled. But, you know, decisions change games, I guess. But Spurs were just so comfortable, weren't they? Anyone?
Yeah, I was. Even if Calvert-Lewin would have scored that goal, I think Tottenham still would have dismantled them. They were really impressive, Tottenham today. I like watching them at the moment. They're on form, following from the Arsenal game in the week, and they look a real threat at the minute.
Jan?
Yeah, mate. I mean, you know, I sing Pochettino's praises high, as you know. They're playing football fantastically. They're picking up results. They're scoring goals for fun. All the players are playing with high confidence. Everything's rosy in the Tottenham camp at the moment. And you know, for a club that haven't spent any money this year to be where they are, you know, it's a fantastic achievement for them so far.
Mark, Everton haven't won a game in five. They've got a lot to be worried about now, don't they?
Yeah, they're struggling. They looked, you know, a few games ago, they looked like a half-decent outfit, looked like they're going in the right direction, but to have no winning five in the Premier League, you start to see the wheels fall off a little bit.
There you go. Right, in other news, Real Madrid won the Club World Cup, beating Al Ain 4-1. Goals from Modric, Marcus Llorente, Sergio Ramos and Yaha Nader on goal gave Real Madrid their third Club World triumph in a row. Incidentally, Al Ain actually beat River Plate on penalties in the semi-final, so much for that Copa Libertadores win, eh? Gents, the Club World Cup has had 14 winners from Europe in 18 years. Now, I doubt anyone would disagree that the standard of European football is miles ahead of the rest of the world. Anyone?
Well, it is, isn't it? Proof's in the pudding from what you just said. So, it can compete with, you know, the European clubs with the money that they've got, really. So, and all the best players play in Europe. So, inevitably, a European club is going to win it.
So are we saying that this competition is pointless because it's only going to be a European team winning it?
I think personally it's pointless, but, you know, again, it's all about money, it's all about, you know, commercial stuff, and, you know, that's how football is these days, isn't it?
Mm. Well, Mark, I know they take this tournament really serious in South America. I know in North America they're really trying to break into it with the whole, you know, CONCACAF.
Right.
So, do you think that an MLS side is going to eventually play in this competition?
Eventually, you'd like to think so. I think it's a long time away. But eventually, you'd like to see one of the teams get in just to see how the games progress, see how they'd actually fare against some of the better teams in the world, so to speak.
Okay, great. Now, over in Serie A, Gianluca Cabrari came off the bench to score twice for Sampdoria in their 4-2 victory at Empoli. Connor, you're a bit of a Serie A connoisseur. I know Samp are only 2 points off a Champions League spot, but consistency has been their main problem this season. They've had big wins against Napoli, which they've beaten 3-0, and Frosinone 5-0, and Bologna 4-1, but fallen short against teams above them.
Yeah, they've definitely got an opportunity this season because Juventus aside, it's quite a shambles underneath at the moment. No one can get any consistent run of form. The biggest thing for Sampdoria is that they're kind of still relying on Quagliarella, who's 35 now. Whether he can last the entire season, the form he's currently in, is a question that they don't really want to find the answer to, because the answer is probably going to be no. And the way it is, you've got 4 points separating 10th and 4th. You know, Roma are down in 10th place, which you never have expected before the season began. So any slip-up is going to be very, very costly for them.
Mm. Do you think it will make any difference if Patrick Schick rejoins the club? Because I know there's a strong rumour that he's going to go back in January on loan, I think.
It would be an odd one, because if there's a team in the league struggling to score goals as much as they should, it's Roma. So I think they're probably worth giving him a go. But Sampdoria also linked with Gabby Adini from Southampton, who I think will be on the move. So it's between Sampdoria and Bologna. So they need someone to take the burden off Quagliarella. Whether they can afford Schick is a different question, because he went for 42 million, I believe, something like that. Italians like to part own players. It's very complicated, but they need something to help up front, because Stampinara as well is not the quality you need in the top end of the table, because if they do qualify for the Champions League, they don't quite have the squad to make any impact on it at the moment. So they need someone.
Excellent. And Patrick Schick, he was at Sampdoria. Before that, he was at Sparta Prague. Sampdoria got a decent scouting system. Perhaps Burnley could adopt that, you know, to help Sean Dyche with his limited resources. Anyway, let's move on with that. Again, in Serie A, Inter Milan have suspended summer signing Raja Nainggolan for disciplinary reasons. I mean, this is a player who was dropped by Roma at the beginning of the year because there was a New Year's Eve video where he was swearing, drinking and smoking. Pogba's a puppy in comparison, isn't he, Ian?
Nainggolan's career has just gone downhill, really. I mean, never got picked for the World Cup, got left out. Got his summer move from Roma to Inter, hardly featured, and now disciplinary issues. I don't know what's happened to him. I know he's always been a bit of a bad boy, you know, attitude, and I don't know where he goes from here, really, to be honest. But that's Inter Milan. Something always happens at Inter Milan. It's just one of them clubs that it seems either the manager or the players, like, you know, something always happens there, and it doesn't come as a surprise to me, to be honest.
Fair enough. Mark, Reading have appointed Real Ave head coach Jose Gomez as their new manager to save them from relegation. How frustrating is it when English clubs have more faith in foreign managers than young, experienced British coaches?
Yeah, it's very frustrating. It's hard for an English coach to get an opportunity in England for whatever reason. That's just the way it is right now, and that's English clubs believe that foreign coaches get the best out of their clubs, I guess. But it's extremely frustrating, especially when you look at some of the coaches that are brought in, and you know, you look at the likes of Pochettino, the top coaches who are obviously affecting the game in a good way, Pochettino, Guardiola. But some of the lower league teams, I really don't understand why they appoint a foreigner when they can give English coach out there an opportunity.
The thing is, people will say, you know, they gave Paul Clement his opportunity. But let's be honest, he had a chance at Derby, he failed. He had a chance at Swansea, he failed. He had his chance at Reading, he failed. Are people like Paul Clement making it difficult for people like you to get into coaching at the highest level because he continually gets jobs even though he keeps failing?
Yeah, I guess like it's been mentioned before, there's the merry-go-round, isn't there? And some people always get the opportunity to jump on. And it's all about who you know, being in the right place at the right time. If you've had a decent career, or he's obviously got a lot of connections, Clement, and that's sometimes what gets you opportunities. It's not what you can do as a coach or what you bring to the table as a coach. It's about who you know and who's on the board, or do you know what I mean? It's those types of things.
Well, there you go.
But to answer your question, yeah, it can be frustrating when you do see. You know, those people who've had the chance and haven't really been as successful as you'd like them to be as a head coach, but continually get other opportunities elsewhere.
Yeah, there you go. It's not what you know, who you know. Yeah, well.
Yep, exactly, mate.
Right, on to Eurotrash.
And now it's time for Eurotrash.
Now, our first story comes from Greece, as this weekend's league games were suspended after referee Thanasis Tsilos was attacked outside his house. The Referees Association released a statement which reads, "We express our indignation of the cowardly attack against our colleague and the repeated attacks on referees. We will not allow these people to continue to try to terrorise us." Foreign referees were brought in by the Greek FA at the beginning of the season to officiate the big Super League games because, well, referees get abuse. So it goes from bad to worse out there. My second story comes from Sweden, as AIK are selling, wait for it, crystallised DNA of club legend Nils-Erik Johansson. So for 3,499 Swedish krona, which is about 300 quid, you'll receive a test tube and DNA that lasts 500 years. Johansson described it as like Jurassic Park. In 500 years, you might see a lot of Johanssons running about. AIK have produced 371 boxes, which is the amount of games Johansson played for the club, containing a test tube of DNA, a captain's armband with his face printed on, and a certificate of authenticity. There you go. Those are my two Eurotrash stories. Gents, I don't think I need to ask you guys which one's the best out of the worst. I'm going to ask you anyway, Jan.
I'm tempted by the DNA. I'm going to have to Google that afterwards. See if I can get a prime delivery in time for Christmas.
Yeah, Rod?
Probably the Greece one, you know.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. I've asked you, Jan?
I'll go for the DNA, mate.
Go for the DNA. Okay. Mark?
Yeah, mate, I think the DNA is interesting.
It's only because I'm used to what happens in Greece anyway, so...
Okay, fair enough.
It's just normal.
There you go. Well, look, I know, Mark, you have to make a move because you've got a few bits to do. So thanks ever so much for your time, mate. Before I let you go, let our listeners know your Twitter handle so they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, mate, Twitter's Mark Briggs.
Fantastic. Well, again, thanks for your time, mate. Have a great Christmas.
Cheers, guys, mate. Have a good Christmas and speak to you in the new year.
Cheers, mate. All the best.
Charming.
Take care. Try. Right, gents, we just got one more thing to do before we wrap up the show, and that's our quiz.
Woo-hoo.
There you go. Now, it's going to be Guess Who again. I don't know if Connor's played or Rod. Have you played this game before? I'm not sure if you guys have played, but what I've done...
It's chaos, isn't it?
Yeah? There you go. So what's basically happened is I've thought of a player, and you guys need to guess who he is, and you have to guess based on the clues, which are his ex-teammates or current teammates. So does that make sense, or have I completely messed that one up at 1 o'clock in the morning?
No, mate, it makes sense.
Was that Rod?
I've done it before.
Oh, you've done it before. Okay, there you go.
Yeah,
there you go. Connor, you know the rules?
Yeah. Okay. I'll give it my best go.
Okay. So the first clue, I'm gonna split it in three. So I've got three clues per section. Okay. First clue is Fernando Torres. Second clue is Stephen Kelly, and the third clue is Valen Berami.
Good God.
What was the first one?
Fernando Torres.
Right.
It's Fernando Torres, Stephen Kelly, and Valen Berami.
Jesus. I can't even think who Stephen Kelly played for. Fulham, wasn't it?
He played for many teams. Right, okay.
Did Stephen Kelly used to play for Liverpool?
No. You're thinking of Steve Finnan.
Yeah. Is that when he played for Tottenham?
Yeah, Stephen Kelly played for Spurs, yeah.
Who was it? Did you say Stephen Kelly?
Yep.
The Palace defender?
No, Spurs, Fulham. Who else did he play for? Reading, I think he played for. Who else did he play for?
Stephen Kelly?
Mm.
Stephen Carr?
No, Stephen Kelly. Definitely Stephen Kelly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Phil, just to reiterate, Stephen Kelly's not the Liverpool one, right?
No, it's not him. It's the one that played for Spurs, he played for Birmingham, he was at Stoke on loan, he was at Fulham, he was at Reading, he ended at Rotherham. Okay. Do you guys want to guess?
I'm trying to think of Liverpool players who have played for Ireland and Spurs. I've got Danny Murphy.
With Danny Murphy, okay. Rod, do you want to pass or do you want to guess?
For some reason, I've got Jose Benayoun in my head, but no, he's not.
It's a current Premiership player still playing, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so it can't be
okay, right, can't be him then, okay.
I'm gonna have to rush you because we're gonna do a couple more rounds anyway. So,
John Walters.
Walters, okay. Jan.
Van Aanholt.
Van Aanholt. Left field. Excellent. Okay, so the next three clues are Benny Kafobe, Yakubu, and Yossi Benayoun.
Yossi and Benny Kafobe, very odd links.
Well, I'll just recap the names anyway, just for our listeners and for you guys. Fernando Torres, Yossi Benayoun, Stephen Kelly, Yakubu, Valen Berami, and Benny Kafobe.
Yakubu, Ben, Pompey, Norbert. This is bloody hard, isn't it? It's easier when you're listening.
Right, come on, guesses. I'm going to give you guys 15 seconds. Starting now.
Oh, God. Still currently playing.
Yep.
In the Premier League.
Yep.
Fucking Leighton Baines, aren't they?
Right, Leighton Baines. He's gone with Baines. Jan?
I'm gonna pass. Well, I can't pass. Think.
Rod?
Yeah. Charlie Adam.
Okay. Right. Next round. Next three clues are Jack Wilshere, Troy Deeney, and Juan Mata.
What the fuck? So definitely a Chelsea player or an ex-Chelsea player.
Ah. Okay. I'll just reiterate the clues again. Kelly, Yakubu, Berami, Deeney, Wilshere, Afobe, Torres, Mata and Benayou.
Nathan Akbai, whatever his name is, for Bournemouth. Go with him.
Nathan.
Oh, you mean Ake?
Ake, Nathan Ake, yeah.
Oh my goodness, he's done it.
Really?
He's done it.
Okay, yeah. Fair play.
Nathan Ake, that is the player. Congratulations, Rod. Wow, well done. Well done. Right, I'll tell you. So Nathan Ake was at Chelsea in 2012. He played with Torres, Mata and Benayoun. He then moved to Reading on loan in 2015, where he played with Anton Ferdinand, Stephen Kelly, Zach Knight and Yakubu. He then moved to Watford on loan again, playing with Berami, Pantilimon and Deeney. And he's at Bournemouth, where he's played with Wilshere, Boruch and Afobe. Very good, wow. Rodri. Very
you know
good.
What, you know what got it for me?
Go on.
The Jack Wilshere one.
Ah, yes. Yes. I had a feeling. But yeah, no, well done, man. Well done. That you're the first person to get this game since we brought you back.
It's not surprising, is it, with the numpties you have on, especially Jan.
When Jan said Van Aanholt, I was like, ah, he's on the right track with the Dutch. But yeah, well done, yeah. Rod. Superb. There you go. Yeah. So the house has been beaten for once. Excellent.
Yeah.
But does that mean Rod, you've got to do it next week?
Rod can do it next week if he wants to. If he can't, then I'll just do another one. That's fine.
Yeah, I'll do it next week. No problem. You just get a thank you, not a prize or nothing, or a mug or a T-shirt.
Well, I'll send you a T-shirt after Christmas. It's not a problem.
I'll send you a thing. I'll send you a well done.
Right, well, get the batch that I'm not an XL like you. I'm just getting an email.
Do you know what? It wasn't bad for it took 50 minutes for you lot to get me, so.
No, I was just stringing it out to get more minutes on the show.
Some things never change. I love it. Brilliant. Well, that's it for this week, guys. Thank you ever so much for your time. I know it's 1 o'clock in the morning. I've been slurring my words all night, and
some of us have not got work, so it doesn't really care. But Jan, what time are you gonna be up?
6:30.
Oh, wounded.
My heart bleeds.
In a minute.
My heart bleeds.
I might as well stay up and go straight to work.
Well, you work around the corner from me, so you can always stay here, you know. It's not a problem.
Oh, that's very nice of you. Thank you very much.
We can sleep under the Christmas tree. Right, gents, I'm going to leave you guys to, before I let you guys go, Twitter handles and anything else you'd like to promote or mention or whatever. Jan?
Yannickis J. Follow us, like us, do what you got to do on Facebook. Rod would tell you the rest.
There you go, Rod.
What's that?
He switches off whenever you talk, Jan. Rod, Twitter handle?
Rod James Giggs.
Excellent. Connor?
I'm newly on Twitter after a problem. At ConnorSwift_94. And obviously at Talking Balls, which you'll find on the FNX and Pitch DMM stuff.
Excellent.
Yeah, give that a go. Stel's on today as well, so plenty of his voice for you tomorrow.
Thank you very much. And I thoroughly enjoyed my appearance on your show, my cameo. Lovely. Well, guys, we're on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. We have a Facebook group page. Please feel free to join it. We have a Patreon, so if you want to help the cause, you can subscribe there. And you can visit StealthSecretSource.co.uk for all your betting tips. 100% this weekend, ladies and gents. 100%. Absolutely filled with that. So until next time, guys, have a happy Christmas. Be safe and enjoy it. Ta-ra.